Field fire chief. There, I got everything set up. Tom Nilsson.
Could have done that while we were talking, but that's all right. Short timer.
Mike Morehouse is with you. Mike, good morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning.
We're going to have you pull that microphone a little closer.
So a little anecdote before we start about it always was, I had a joke with a friend where it's like when something bad happens, there's always someone that says, you know, this is a real inconvenience to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, fatal car crash. Man, that really set me back in time. So I was talking to the facilities guys over at Laird Stadium last week, and it was the Lighten Up garage sale that had been going on there last mm-hmm. week. And so the facilities guys, they're trying to pull dumpsters up and get it out of the way, and they said that people were coming in and parking up on Highway 19 and walking down saying, how do we get to the garage sale? They're like, the building's full of water. It was like, you're kidding me. I drove down from St. Paul for this. And I just felt so bad. It's like, if you guys kept your cool, you get a raise.
Flooding, of course, has been the big news story this week. And the fire department has a history of flooding itself. As a matter of fact, our facility there really put a lot of money into renovating that and alleviating some of those flooding concerns that you've had in the past because you're right there by the river. Let's talk about how the fire hall has survived. Has it been good? Have the things that we paid a lot of money for, is that paying off?
Yeah. I mean, we doubled the size of the building, and it was also raise it higher out of the floodplain. And I think it was like 6 feet that the grade came up around the building as part of that project. And one thing that did is it knocked like $23,000 off of our flood insurance for the building by doing that. So,
and is that a yearly total?
So it's huge for what that did. We had, you know, made sure that our sump pumps were running and all that, but really the infrastructure was unscathed for the fire station. And it's like anything else, you know, when the things that were going on in New Orleans, it was like firefighters couldn't show up because they were dealing with what was going on in their own homes. In this case, just to know that we had power, you know, gas and dry for our facility, we weren't scrambling trying to make sure our own infrastructure was good.
I'm impressed with that. $23,000 a year, you know, in 4 years, just a little over 4 years, that's $100,000.
That's a lot of money.
So I don't know when did that was done, maybe 5 years ago?
2018 is when the...
So 6 years ago, yeah, we've saved over $150,000.
So yeah, it's significant. And, you know, that's, I think, really the underlying tone for at least from my and fire's observations of the flood this year is that it's like with your dad, did you something wrong? Well, did you learn something or are you going to just do it again? I think everyone changed a lot of things since 2010. I mean, we look at the work that was done, city infrastructure, fire hall, Froggy Bottoms, a lot of these places. Mike and I toured the first part of the week. And for the things that could be mitigated, most everyone has done that. And that makes a big difference to kind of turn this, I don't want to call it a non-event, especially to the folks over at Carlson, but it's like a known event is maybe a better way to put it. Carlton, a lot of the buildings around, everyone like said, okay, here's the high mark, here's what we have to do to prevent it from doing further damage. So mm-hmm. I think the impact is going to be significantly less. And of course, I'm just talking about the Northfield area. We know there's a lot of stuff upstream where people's lives are devastated.
Yeah, if you look at some of the crops out in the fields
right
now, it's going to be an interesting year when the final yields come in, final totals. It's started off to be such a good year with our rain and everything, and it looked like going to be a bumper crop, but too much of a good thing.
That's right. So I wanted to bring Mike in today. Mm-hmm. He's been in with us before. Mike is the building official for the city of Northfield. We had a call last month, early this month, I can't remember exactly what it was, of someone smelling natural gas in the basement. And we responded, and it was turned out to be a water heater that was recently put in. And so then we did some follow-up, and it's like, well, you know, we made sure the gas was off. We rolled a bunch of trucks to there, and it turned out to be, it was like, well, you know, we know this guy, and this guy, he's a plumber, and so he kind of came over and did the work. And I thought it would be good to bring Mike in because there's some serious safety concerns about doing construction and things without a permit and without inspections and contractors' licenses and things with that. And I thought it'd be good to bring Mike in to explain a little bit about how that works. And he knows about the electrical side, even though he doesn't permit that. But what stuff people can do on their own, and then the cautions of saying, well, you know, Bob next door, he's a plumber. Let's see if he can do this for us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because we all know people, none of us, of course, would ever do that, would do anything without pulling a permit, but let's talk about that. Maybe you could help people draw the line some things are okay to do yourself. There's not danger involved for a do-it-yourselfer. Other things, there is very much a potential in danger, so let's kind of find out about that.
Sure, thank you. So it starts with the scope of work you're doing. Basically, a homesteaded homeowner can do anything on their own house or for their own house. So that includes electrical, plumbing, mechanical, carpentry. However, the requirements are that about the only thing that is exempt from a permit would be things like maintenance. So fixing a faucet or setting a toilet in the same location. Countertops, painting, those types of things don't require a permit. But if you were to change anything, alter or replace, that's when a permit would come into place, come into requirement. So if you're going to replace a water heater, a gas stove, replace a kitchen sink, a new gas dryer, electric water heater even, we need permit for that. So we all have brother-in-laws, uncles, friends, dads that are handy, have a great set of tools, whatever, and get some of these projects completed. However, we do want to make sure that these things are installed safely.
Tell us about the process of getting a permit. Usually, if you have a reputable contractor, they will get that done. But is it up to the homeowner ultimately to get that done?
If you hire a contractor, they would be responsible for pulling that permit. Mm-hmm. The process of pulling the permit is pretty straightforward. We have a couple options. We have an online option on the city website. We also have paper copies in office, so you can come down and submit that. At the end of the day, it is the homeowner's responsibility to make sure that there is a permit one way or the other. Whether that contractor is licensed or they're pulling the permit, it's their responsibility.
And with that permit, though, you also get some assurance when it's done, and that you get an inspector over to make sure that it was done right.
Yes.
And that's an automatic part of the process, is it not?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
It's the
permit holder's responsibility to schedule that inspection. Whoever holds that permit is responsible for scheduling the inspection and either attending or not attending. It all depends on the type of permit, but we can walk you through that process.
How many people are involved in your department?
There's four of us mm-hmm. right now. There's myself, we have a full-time building inspector, we have a full-time permit tech, and a part-time ordinance inspector.
All right. So once again, Mike Morehouse is with us. He's with the City of Northfield and in the building department, our inspection department, I should say. Is that what is your official title?
Our department is the Building and Inspections Department, mm-hmm. and I'm the building official. So what we take care of in town is all building, commercial and residential, rental inspections, rental licensing and inspections, ordinance enforcement. And in ordinance enforcement. So mm-hmm. those are our responsibilities.
And if somebody is planning on doing it themselves, can they, of course, pull up getting the permit and going through the proper process? Is there information online that they can go to find out a little bit more about how that process is done and what they need to do?
There is. Mm-hmm. If you go to the City of Northfield website, northfieldmn.gov, and go to the Home and Yard tab, highlight that or open that up, and we have some guidance there as to the process, the actual forms, etc.
And as far as the building codes, if they are attempting something, do they need to have it up to code, of course. Where do they find the codes at?
Those are online as well. Mm-hmm. We have a link on our website that will send you to the Minnesota Department of Labor, which documents all of those codes. And mm-hmm. You can also go to MNDOLI. That's it.
All right. Anything else we need to know?
Yeah, one thing on permitting that I learned, too, is that just because your next-door neighbor is an electrician, let's say, or a plumber, that doesn't mean that they have a contractor's license. So most tradespeople, and Minnesota's really good about that, have a license. Mike has a plumbing license. I have a power limited low voltage license or a doorbell license. But I'm not a contractor. I'm a licensed worker. Mm-hmm. A contractor is the one who needs to pull these permits unless it's you, the homeowner. So if you ask your neighbor who's the electrician to come and do some work on the side, their license can be in jeopardy if something happens because they're not a contractor. So that's the last thing I wanted to close out on that.
All right. Let's move into, well, Vest Fest. We had Vest Fest since the last time we talked to you.
We have not talked about that. And we are, the Vest Fest is, again, a reminder, is it really was kicked off by the Defeated Jesse James Days Committee as well as the VFW Auxiliary after the Burnsville shooting this spring. And it is raising funds to be able to get the ambulance personnel and fire personnel to have body armor for those you hope never happen kind of event. Right now, I think, and the money keeps coming in, we're at about $25,000. And our goal is $35,000 to be able to get a certain number of those. So we're kind of in the soft part of the campaign. We're going to end up closing it down probably about the end of Jesse James Days. And so there still is time. If you want to make a donation to that, you can send your checks to the fire station. And that address is online at nafrs.org. And again, thanks to the Defeat of Jesse James Days Committee and the VFW Auxiliary for their work on that.
All right. Tom Nelson is with us. Tom, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the 4th of July coming up. Ever been any fire danger involved?
Well, yeah, and you know, that's some of the best conversations I think we have are off mic beforehand about, hey, remember back when, and so there'd always be some neighbor that would go over to South Dakota or Wisconsin. You know, there's the obvious things is that, as we talked beforehand too, is that alcohol doesn't always make better decision making. It may seem funner.
Not always.
Not always. Sometimes. but you got to use your sense. And there, we had an RN that taught for us for the rescue squad that she worked at the Regents Burn Unit and would talk about 4th of July, fire pit, hey, hold my beer, watch this. That seriously, people do end up in the burn unit. So that's one of the things my kids would all say if I say, hey, what's going to happen if you do that? They said, you're going to end up in the Regents Burn Unit. So be smart. The alcohol thing, keep that in moderation. If you're doing that, don't. It's sort of like don't drink and drive. Don't drink and use explosives. The other thing is grill safety, as we've talked a lot about here, is we have a lot of fires that the grill's too close to the house, the propane. Have that stuff moved away. We've had people that have pulled the grill, charcoal grill, back into the garage at the end of the night, and then the garage starts on fire. You know, so go to that extra mile to make sure you do that.
All right. You know, as far as injuries within the within fireworks and such, I recall, you know, when I was a kid, there was. It seemed like things were a lot more lax back then, a lot different back in the 70s when we were lighting off fireworks. Has there been an upwards or downwards trend as far as you know, injuries go? Are people better than that? Are adults and parents getting bit better at
we
the
know
supervision
that the,
involved?
You know, what's, quote, legal in Minnesota are basically things that don't explode. That they can go up in the air, but... I mean, when you listen the whole weekend of 4th of July, you're hearing it all around you, and you see some displays that are, like, bigger than the ones that the city of Northfield puts on. So people get that stuff. I do think that there are there's less, and I think people have just kind of gotten the message. And, you know, watch your kids. They say a lot of times in ER, people end up coming in there. Barefoot kids step on sparkler leftovers or whatever, you know, the tailings from a sparkler. They throw it down in the lawn and then somebody steps out and they burn their foot because it's some super hot flame. So again, common sense, watch your kids.
Keep a bucket of cold water, of water out there and discards in there.
Don't grab the phone like, oh, this is going to be a really good YouTube. It's about just keeping everyone safe.
All right. Remember the animals as well. They kind of go crazy a little bit when they start running off the fireworks. So keep your animals safe and try to keep them comforted.
Yes.
All right. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Jeff, coming in. We sure appreciate it, Tom, Mike. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next month.
All right. Be safe.